hey there. It's Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, your girl. Welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over of the pop culture we all love to love. Don't have many of us here today, so I will say who's here always and forever, so consistent and always the best, pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Thompson.
Hey, Winter. Hi, Rocketeers. I mean, I'm a Virgo. I can't help it. I'm just too uptight.
Like Beyonce. You know, Beyonce's a Virgo.
Yeah, she shows up for all her shit,
and
too.
And she's very successful.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm going to start trying to be more like you. I'm working on it. Trust. And we have a wonderful guest here today whose name completely belied who I thought she was going to be, which means I need to Google more. Writer-comedian Ellington Wells.
Hi, hello. What were you expecting?
A dude.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Nope. Sorry.
That's it. But seeing you here, you're lovely. This is a perfect alternative
Thank
to what
you
I
so
thought.
Much. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She is a writer, and I'm sure she's going to be a sassy participant tonight, I can already tell. And her new show is Comedy Central's The New Negroes, a term I love seeing on the page. Ellington, what should our listeners know about the show, you and the show?
So I am a stand-up comedian and a writer. This show is going to air on Comedy Central and also air on BET, simulcast. It is a stand-up showcase show. And so it's three stand-ups. It's all black comics. And the whole show is about showing how diverse black people are in America and that black people are not a monolith. And so it's just about inclusion and diversity within the black community.
Love it. That's exciting. I can't wait for that.
It's amazing. I'm really excited. And I can't wait to talk about it on the show tonight. So
we have a lot to get through this week, but I'm going to take a moment to remind our listeners our own pledge drive. I'm going to get really Jerry Lewis for a minute right now. You know, the Pop Rocket seal of approval nomination process is officially open. We've gotten some really solid noms, you guys. Sandra Oh, back at it again.
She's everywhere and in everything right now.
Yes,
and
she's perennial.
Popping on up here on the
and
Pop Rocket.
I have new feelings about her.
There's really? So many new feelings. Yes. Lots of new tingles.
Emotional feelings, tingly feelings.
Did you see her host SNL?
When she played the wife that he the girlfriend to the wife that like the in the mirror. That sketch.
Yeah.
That was my favorite sketch.
Yeah.
That's when
so
I was like,
good.
I'm in love with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara, which is, if yes. Sandra's number two, Catherine is number one for me.
Mm.
Stephen King, I mean, yes.
Yeah.
And then Parker Posey, sure. I know there's a lot of people who love her.
Winter. We don't have Guy and Margaret here to be on the Parker Posey train right
That's
now.
That's what I'm saying.
So we're like, we're pumping up some of them like Sandra, oh, Catherine O'Hara.
And Parker Posey. If you want. If there's someone you think should be placed into consideration, there are two ways to do it. You can call and leave a message with not my mom, it's Guy's mom, at 530-237-4108. And if leaving a voicemail is, like, weird and, like, you don't do it in your everyday life anyway, why would you do it for us? You can use your phone's recording app and email us the recording at poprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Record it as many times as you need until you're satisfied and then send it over. That's poprocketpodcast@gmail.com. By the way, listener Nick White called in with a new nomination. Nick gave us a passionate, unforgettable plea for Tina Turner for the very first PRS.
Oh, yeah. So amazing.
It was so amazing.
So convincing.
I'll never forget it, by the way. And she went on to win the nomination. So let's take a listen to a portion of his latest suggestion.
I would like to nominate the Violet Valley Bookstore, the queer feminist bookstore in Water Valley, Mississippi, for this year's seal of approval. So many times we think about popular culture by its products, its stars and singers and movies and TV shows, and few times, I think, do we give attention to those facilitators of popular culture and the arts, particularly those places that support and underline art produced by marginalized voices. This nomination is personal for me. As a gay man from Mississippi, I spent the years I lived there as a teen and young adult in the closet. Books were my refuge and my salvation. While Violet Valley did not exist for me back then, it is there now. a beacon for queer folk of the South to come in, be out, and find ourselves and our stories.
He just makes me cry.
Every time.
Every time. It's just poignant.
Always solid work, right?
Thank you, Nick, for that nomination. Solid work, as we come to expect from you. That sounds like a lovely bookstore, but we're limiting nominations to people this time around. Karen, is there anything you'd like to say to Nick?
Well, I don't really have anything to say to Nick, but we have somebody here, perchance, who might have something to say to Nick. I'm going to just turn it on over to someone named Jamie Harker.
Nick White, I love you so much. You are the greatest person. I just love him. I heard him read when he came to Oxford, Mississippi, and that's where I teach. And I opened the bookstore just down the road from there.
So we have here, yep, in Los Angeles, California, the owner of the Violet Valley Bookstore.
And how that fortuitous!
Is Jamie Harker.
That's so insane.
So tell us a little bit, Jamie, about, like, you know, how you're a professor at Ole Miss, and how is it that you decided that you would also run a bookstore, a queer bookstore for people?
Well, it was two things, really. One is that I've been working on this book on Southern lesbian feminists who were all involved in the women in print movement. So I've been reading about these writers who also owned their own bookstores and ran their own presses and led all these sort of conferences and networked. And I thought, wow, these women did everything. And they did it with like $500 in their pocket just out of college, living in like a third floor walk up, you know, in a collective. I thought, well, you know, I have a salary. I'm totally ahead of most of them. I could do something little like that. And the other thing was, you know, Mississippi, as you know, has been doing this gay backlash for a while. And they passed an early version of these religious freedom, quote unquote, anti-gay bills. And I thought, you know, I'm so tired of all these messages to queer kids in the state about we don't want you here, you're not valued here. You know, there's no gay discrimination bill in the state, right? But they're protecting other people to discriminate without any kind of recourse. And I thought, you know, I'm not a politician. I can't do a lot of things, but I'm a book person. So what I can do is open a bookstore.
Mm. And those places are so important. You know, we were talking just earlier about how I wouldn't have learned about, like, lesbian, like, culture or, like, what a labyrinth was. I wouldn't have had a place to loiter when I was a college student to maybe see other gay people were it not for those bookstores. So, you know, could you give us a sense of how often are you open and what's, like, one of your favorite things that you like to do there?
So we are open only on Saturdays now because I work during the week. So we do it by appointment. Sometimes people are coming into town and I'll open it for them.
Wow.
But usually we're open on Saturdays. And people drive to see me now. I mean, it's becoming a destination. So I got people driving down from Memphis and up from Jackson. And that's my favorite part is when those kids show up and they've never seen a place that has stories about them before. And there are three gay pride flags in my bookstore. One in the window. So they come in and they're just taking pictures and they're jumping up and down and they're so excited to be there.
That's awesome. I've never thought about going to Oxford, but I guess if I do, by the way, if I end up going there, it would probably be just to come see you. But because of that, you have to take me someplace that has good soul food so as to make it worth
I got
the
you.
Connection. Okay.
I was going to say, my wife is a chef, so I will take you to her
perfect.
Restaurant.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly, right? See, it's perfect. You've got the bookstore, you've got the chef. It's like the lesbian dream. So where can people find Violet Valley online?
So we are on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We also have a website. So if you want to order swag, we have T-shirts and we have bags and we can also send you. We have specialties in Southern queer literature and history. So if you're interested in that, we can also ship that to you.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for dropping in while you were here in L.A.
My pleasure.
And, you know, Nick.
That was for you.
That was for you, boo. Like, look at what we do for our listeners.
Yes.
You get, like, the real live people responding to their nominations.
I love you, Nick.
And he's a day one A1, so thank you for coming and sharing this with us and joining us.
Thank you.
Jamie's great. I love her. I will be taking her up on that offer to
come
visit.
Yeah, she better bring us to Mississippi. Pop Rocket in Oxford, Mississippi. Now, that sounds like an adventure.
By the way, if we do that, though, we're going to have to bring a camera crew.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
We're going to need... I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, no,
okay,
let's
okay,
do it.
Okay, let's do it. We'll plan that.
I've got some DPs I know.
I know you do.
Mini doc.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see
BTS,
it all.
BTS, the whole deal.
All of it.
Let's start fundraising.
I'm going to start a GoFundMe right now. coming up in this week's show, the new Negroes, Ellington's new show we can't wait for, and some old Negroes as well. We'll be talking about black sketch comedy shows. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Katie, oh, your favorite.
You just like, you already tipped your hand. You looked at the script. You're already prejudging before I even utter a single word.
I wonder who it's about this
Look,
week.
Given that we've been talking about the Pop Rocket seal of approval, given the controversies that have surrounded the PRSOA, I thought it might be controversial to bring this up. But honestly, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the final season, season 4, was just released on Netflix.
And West Covina weeps.
It's West Covina weeps. There are crying pretzels everywhere. I, you know, decided to wait until the entire season was available so I could binge it because I really hate watching on that CW streaming platform. Mm. That is just like the bummer of an experience.
Really?
That they take the episodes off at a certain point. So now I have the full suite of episodes, songs, commercials, and let me just say, I'm only about midway through the season, and I just remembered why I fell in love with the show to begin with, not only because of the luminous Rachel Bloom, sorry, Winter, don't shoot me those eye darts, but also just like seeing how well the show really grapples with its like main issues, its main thematics, from, you know, mental health to personal growth and like what it means to be Filipino, Filipino American, different racialized subjects in the SoCal suburbs, and, you know, to see Renee Gube getting some action in there again. But also, you know, the heart and soul of it is the musical numbers, really. And from the jump of season 4, you really get how smart the show is about its like intertexts with other musicals. So many like Broadway references from Chicago to Oklahoma, like the Farmer and the Cowman Should Be Friends, like basically in a whole group number trying to convince White Josh to get back together with White Feather. Anyway, it's worth watching this season. If you feel like you've fallen off and you don't know if you want to get back into it, trust me, you're going to want to see how this all plays out. I'm really eager to see how it all plays out. So much love to the creators of the show, to Rachel Bloom for like making this thing happen and last for 4 seasons, even though it was the lowest rated network show, I think, ever.
Really?
Yeah, and say that they kept renewing it.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that kept getting renewed, basically, right? So to last multiple seasons and to bring this strange experimental take to our small screens, I think it's going to have a lasting legacy. And, you know, no matter what you detractors out there, Winter, have to say.
Ellington, what are you all about this week?
Okay, so... This is like breaking news. So my friends that are also comics run this podcast. I don't mean to rep another podcast.
No. Those are my
here.
Girls. It's Babs and Tessa's podcast.
Yes, yes. Barbara Gray and Tessa Barker, I believe. And they have a podcast called like Brittany Graham. And they have just like released this emergency episode.
I love it.
Because Brittany, they received a tip from an anonymous source that they then verified that Brittany has been checked into a mental health facility against her will.
Oh, wow.
And so they have this like whole podcast where they like go through the whole thing. So she's been in a conservatorship.
Yeah.
For like 10 years.
Yeah.
And her father has been in charge of her like entire estate and everything that she does and and her like her personal body. And so he basically has been she wasn't taking her medicine. She didn't want to be taking her medicine. And so they ended up checking her into a facility like against her will. And so it's just like
I know why she don't want to take her medicine.
My God.
She's not getting horny no more.
She's probably been just like so felt so hollow for so long.
I just like I can't say too much on it, but I can say that I fully believe this scenario.
It's so interesting. The whole thing. I'm just so interested in it. And I really like have done a lot of like research, but just like personal interest in like how we deal with these like female pop stars that start as children. And when we like grow up with them and they grow up with this eye on them for so long and what that does to them and how it just kind of like it's amazing the fans like really want to protect her mm-hmm. but also really want to control her.
Yeah.
That's with everybody that I've found. Just I've just had the opportunity to work with a few pop stars now, and fans really pretend or assume ownership over them.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting how we interact with celebrity, but specifically I feel like pop stars, like music, there's something about
because they sing
into
our ears.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's like their personal feelings become our personal feelings.
Exactly.
The conduit for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say, though, there's something like sort of Machiavellian or like it's just these the ways in which these women like get, I don't know, institutionalized outside of their control. It's so like... It's like reading like one of those Gothic Victorian novels, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's just suddenly like the father, like these men who are in charge, lock mm-hmm. them
She's
up.
She's hysterical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just sort of like, and it takes so much for a woman to be able to prove her own sense of like mm-hmm. self-control and sanity. And it's just, I don't know.
I loved this episode, and Babs and Tess are so passionate about it that they like uncovered every rock and mm-hmm. went right up in there. Mm-hmm. And they found it was like a paralegal who left the voicemail. That's some legit shit. Somebody's trying to get the word out. You should listen. My all about this week is probably sits right in the middle of this, both of these things. I watched No Good Nick. It is a new show on Netflix that just came out in the last couple of days. Let me tell y'all something about this show, okay? It has all the markings of a Nick, like a Nick Disney show, like a Disney freeform, three cam, multi-cam comedy sitcom, right? You're like locked in. It is the appearance of that, but the show is about a family that takes in a young woman who allegedly lost her parents in a car accident, and in this family are her cousins removed, twice removed. She's a con artist. And they put somehow inadvertently through the dad, her parents lost everything and had to go to jail. And she's going into the house to rip them asunder from the inside. It looks like it has the aesthetic of a Disney show. It has a laugh track, a studio audience. It is set primarily in a school in like Full House type scenario. Melissa Joan Hart's the mom.
Your goddess.
Sean Astin is the dad.
What? This is bizarre.
It is beyond bonkers.
And it's good.
And it's good.
Okay.
It talks about prison reform. It talks about cultural appropriation. There's an entire scenario where they make fun of the big brother who's like an Alex P. Keaton type, and he was Thomas Jefferson for Halloween, and they dragged his ass, dragged his ass for about the whole episode. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk sketch comedy and the New Negroes after this.
Hi, it's Ali Kokesh, one of the cast members of Mission to Zix, a new addition to the Max Fun Network. We're blown away by the welcome we've received from Max Fun listeners, telling us you've discovered the show and are binging it hard, supporting us during the drive, and just being rad humans all around. Mission to Zix is an improvised, obsessively sound-designed sci-fi comedy epic, following a group of ambassadors as they explore the ass end of space. I play Dar, the 12-foot-tall omnisexual security officer with furry scales, chest talons, and a series of flaps and chutes that are for... Yeah, you know what? You'll figure it out. We'd be delighted if you joined our crew aboard the aging sentient starship, the Bargerian Jade, as we travel the Zix Quadrant, meeting all sorts of weird aliens played by brilliant guest comedians. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host for the night, Winter Mr. Rohrbaugh. With me in the studio are...
Ellington Wells.
And Karen Tongson.
All right, guys, we're getting into it. It's going to get racial. New Negroes is a sketch comedy starring comedian Baron Vaughn and rapper Open Mike Eagle. Let's kick things off first, listening to Vaughn explain the show's title.
New Negro was the name of an ideological movement. It was literary, artistic, political, social, all of that. Like the Harlem Renaissance, that was part of the New Negro movement. And this show is an extension of that. Thank
you. What does it mean to create material intended to be an extension of the New Negro Movement?
You know, so each episode we did was a different theme. So like one of the episodes, the theme is toxic masculinity. Mm. And these themes really are just in the song that that Open Mic wrote, but then also in, they kind of talk about it in the hosting bits before and like in between the comedians. And so that was basically what we were writing, mm-hmm. was how do we bring up these like really intense conversations that Baron and Open Mic, just by being Black and being men in that particular case, face and have to deal with like on an everyday basis, mm-hmm. and they just wanted to have conversations about it, and they're like very whimsical and like vaudevillian,
yeah,
so it's really fun to play around with them.
That's what
that
it
way.
Sounds like, yeah, mm-hmm. is that the sense of like, you know, having a framing discussion, mm-hmm. that it has that kind of more of a talk show format, like, mm-hmm. alongside that kind of vaudevillian, like, you know, you get your little title card, this is what we're gonna do, mm-hmm. And you know, and that is in many respects kind of in keeping with the entertainments of that like Harlem Renaissance, New Negro Movement, yeah. early 20th century too.
And so also like the title does come from a book of the same name, mm-hmm. that came out in the 1920s. And it was a collection of essays by like at the time some kind of like new Black artists like Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston. But it kind of was a representation of kind of like bringing together all sorts of different Black voices. And I think that's kind of, Baron really did want to bring on comics that were old Negroes and new Negroes. Mm-hmm. So like George Wallace is on the show.
Ooh, I love him.
Oh my God.
It's so funny. Magical.
I know. It's just incredible. And then this incredible comic like Sonia Denis, who is from New York, it'll be their premiere on television. So
oh, wow.
It really is like bringing a lot of different elements of like Black comedy into one place and kind of like mashing it together.
Well, and one of the things that you brought up when you were talking about it earlier at the top of the show is the sense of like being able to show the diversity within the Black community. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something like in the Asian, I know, and as a correlative in the Asian American community, it's like we're not all from the same place.
Yeah.
And we don't all have the same cultural points of reference, mm-hmm. and or class or these sorts of things. And I think that that's so often the way we talk about race in America is to think, as you're saying, like about Black America as a kind of monolithic cultural experience. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool that through comedy, you can figure out a way to explore all those different modalities of what it means,
yeah,
to be Black and to be an artist,
yeah,
in, you know, the contemporary,
yeah,
world.
But they all, you know, they all rep Wakanda, so
right
at the end of the day, it's all about Wakanda,
right.
My friend Tashi Condoleezza, shout out to Tashi Condoleezza, she'll say
Wakanda,
and I just die every time she says it. Makes me so happy.
There is someone being born named, yes. Wakanda right now, just FYI. Yeah. I felt it in it, they're here.
Wakanda,
6
forever.
Pounds, 8 ounces. Wakanda Jenkins. In what ways would you say the New Negroes is different than sketch shows that came before it? I mean, you're basically, essentially, you're when it comes to Comedy Central, it was Chappelle's show,
mm-hmm.
it was Key and Peele, mm-hmm. and now it's this show.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Chocolate News, and then this show.
Yeah, it definitely was influenced by those shows. Actually, Baron is very, he has one show that he really, truly feels like New Negroes is like birthed out of, for him personally, and it's called Robert Townsend and His Partners in Crime.
Yes, mm. girl, Partners in Crime.
And that's so
such a great special.
Yeah, which is like, you know, they have stand up and then they have some sketch, mm-hmm. and then he also said that they're bringing together some kind of like older comics, and then but also like David Alan Greer is on the show, and you know, you had the Wayans brothers, like, and this is like before In Living Color. Mm-hmm. So it's really just like he really does feel like he's showing us kind of Black stand ups that maybe we've missed or maybe we would like to see more of, and then we're also getting these like this new batch of Black comics that are finding different, you know, speeds. You know, it's not Def Comedy Jam.
Really. Right, right.
It's a new era.
I guess we should talk about the impact of sketch comedy. You know, we can start with Pryor, but we know how that ended. But sort of like from Eddie on SNL all the way to now to your show, just sort of like, what was the pattern? What was for you, maybe, Karen, like, what was your favorite example or experience with this, you know, depending on what it is you were drawn to?
Well, I mean, when I first moved to the U.S., when it was Richard Pryor was like, and was like starring in all those movies with folks, you know, like Steve Martin or whoever, right?
Oh,
like,
my God,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, so like the mm-hmm. kind of the domestication of Richard Pryor right. in these mainstream comedies and stuff like that.
So you went and saw Moving.
Look.
We all did.
My parents
We just had
did.
To.
And, you know, I tagged along with them wherever we went. But I think that the moment where it became really salient to me, especially when I was a more sentient like teenager or whatever, was like when In Living Color came on, you know. Mm-hmm. You saw my yearbook, my
yes.
high school yearbook, the theme was In Living Color. and
true.
It was like, you know, styled after the show.
It really was
yeah.
true.
That's
and,
so funny.
And but you know, like it became that moment where I had like a kind of aha moment where I realized, oh, these other sketch comedy shows I'm watching, namely SNL, doesn't, you know, like does not have a very diverse cast or point mm-hmm. of view. And so seeing In Living Color really blew my mind. Also from like the music to, you know, the Fly Girls to
right,
like
yeah.
to also seeing like, you know, like different other kind of black subcultures being represented, even if they were problematic, you know, like men
yeah.
in film or stuff like that.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know. So I think that that was sort of my that was a kind of realization to me at how segregated comedy was actually in its mainstream forms and its like mm. in the sketch forms that were popularized mm. on television. Mm-hmm. What was your set of inspirations that made you decide that you were going to be a comedian and to write comedy?
So I grew up in Vermont.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. I tell a
Whoa.
Lot of jokes
Sound
about
of Music
it.
Family band, right? Because that's where they all settled.
It is, yeah, the yeah. Von Trapp family.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Vermont, and I tell jokes about this on stage, but I mean, I felt very black growing up because my mom is black, and she raised me. And, you know, like we were on the cover of the Burlington Free Press 1 year for celebrating Kwanzaa.
Oh, no.
It was just,
please
that's all
don't.
We did.
Oh, my God, I can't.
It was a full-page article.
Oh, my God, I can't.
They were like,
breathe.
Who taught these black people to celebrate their heritage?
Holy shit. Did they follow you all 7 days?
were they
in your house every day being like, so what are we doing tonight?
Investigative journalism. Absolutely, absolutely.
Hello.
And what is this?
We're in front of a fireplace and we're like sewing gifts. Yeah, it's really good. So I felt like very black, and like I would like I had these like comic books about Martin Luther King Jr.'s life, and I had books about Malcolm X, and I would like read them, like, but like I would recite them like from memory, like I knew everything that had happened and like the years they had. Like I was very militant as a child, but there were like very few other black people in this whole state. So
did you ever see Bernie Sanders?
Yeah. I've seen him. I have seen him.
I think him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he lives there. So
yes.
Yeah.
And he's a millionaire.
And he's soft on guns.
So. Soft on guns, yeah, though. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Show your taxes, what I... summer home.
But how did they track you? I'm still like... Was that a formative
okay,
moment
so
where
my
you had
grandfather,
to perform your
My mom
newspaper?
Grew up in Vermont, too. Yeah. And it was even worse for her. It's way worse for her. She grew up in Vermont in the 60s and 70s. So it's just a whole mess
I
for her.
I want to meet her, FYI.
But my grandfather was a professor at the University of Vermont. So he brought his whole family up there. And, but it was just, you know, so, like, the newspaper, like, every Thanksgiving would call my grandfather and be like, so, pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie? You know what I mean? Like,
oh.
That's, he got phone calls from
oh,
the newspaper
God.
Whenever something would happen to black people. So, mm-hmm. it, that was just, like, what we grew up with. We were just, mm-hmm. like, the local color. Literally. Quite literally.
There's something interesting, especially talking about your upbringing, how we're introduced to black comedy. Mm. I think about with you, KT, like you guys are when I say you guys, I mean Filipinos. Uh-huh. You're more open to sort of, because you, entertainment is all your jam.
Yeah, yeah. Entertainment runs through the blood. I mean, literally in my family, but yeah, through everyone. Even
as my mom said this week, y'all be singing and dancing all the time.
Well, I mean, but that is like, I mean, look at Bruno.
Look at him.
Look at him. But no, KT, she said it to our Pinoy, like Uber driver, and I was like, shut up.
And but did he sing for you though?
Yes,
of course. You know, because we know how to sing. Because we have the families make us do these talent shows. So the whole variety sketch format is something that just happens at every family party.
That's so funny.
So to see that like replicate on TV, that feels very comfortable. That feels very familiar. Yeah. But like I said, you know, like you just, it doesn't. The 90s was coming to like racialized consciousness for a lot of people.
Sure.
Honestly. Sure. And so like, you know, to see that versus, and also just to see how so many different cast members on SNL barely had anything to do at some point.
God.
You're like, there's like,
still.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Or you're like, oh yeah, Chris Rock was on SNL.
Right.
You know,
and it's
sort of like,
painful.
Yeah, and it's painful to watch. It's painful to watch now. And you're like, it's like people haven't resolved that whole issue.
We have to give a shout out to Tim Meadows. And we have to give a shout out, honestly, to Kenan Thompson.
Kenan.
He's been on since 2003.
Yeah. And Kenan before, I mean, all of that, like he has really been around.
Yeah.
And he really deserves a lot of credit. And he is someone who every time he talks on a sketch on SNL, I laugh.
To what extent in your show that are you like maybe addressing, like you said, you have a whole episode on toxic masculinity. What are some of the other kind of hot button issues or identity things that aren't necessarily exclusively about like the kind of, you know, panoply of Black experience? Are you going to touch upon this season?
One of my favorite episodes is about wokeness.
Oh, yeah.
And about how wokeness is over.
It really is.
And I don't know if it made it into the show, but we wrote a funeral procession for wokeness and like RIP wokeness, it's dead. We just had so much fun. In the wokeness episode, the song about wokeness is one of my absolute favorites. It's open mic in Fonte, and it is just like, I can't wait for you guys. It's just an incredible song because Mike has this incredible verse about how woke he is. And you think like, honestly, when you listen to the song, you're like, okay, that's all the stuff you can say about wokeness. Like, that's great. It was an incredible verse. Like, good luck. And then the next, like, Fonte comes in with this verse that is just out of this world. Like, it's just so fun about how he's like so much more woke than Mike. It's just an incredible. And
it sounds,
you know,
like a Macklemore song.
Exactly. The Lucas brothers are in it.
I love them. They're great.
Yeah, they're great.
How hard is it to attack? Not even attack. That's a wrong word. How hard is it to approach just the diaspora of Blackness now, because there's been such a huge evolution of it and our leaders look different than they used to look like, and the experience of Blackness is just different than it used to be?
Yeah, I think it is really interesting. Like me and another person in the room at one point had an argument for 3 hours. Because, and I will not even gender this person, I'll just leave it that they, because I don't want to call them out, but
it was
they
white
did
dude.
Not, no, no white, no whites.
Oh, what? No white.
There were no whites in the room.
No whites in the room. Wow, this is exclusive. Exclusive.
They didn't like the end of Moonlight, and we... fought?
I thought you were going to say moonlighting. I was going to be like, yes, it was terrible.
Oh, no. This is, no. Okay. No, this is a little bit, this is a little bit back.
Okay. Moonlighting. No moonlighting.
No moonlight.
Okay. You know what moonlighting is?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it though.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't
You're
seen
so
it yet.
Young. I thought you would get that.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, I know what the show Moonlight is. Yeah, isn't there a new movie out?
No, but no. I thought you said they didn't like the end of Moonlighting. I was like, yes, I agree.
No. Oh, no, I do know Moonlighting. But, it has the Bruce Academy, Willis. Yes. Am I right? Okay,
the Academy
see, I got
award-winning film Moonlight. Just to be clear. Yes. That's what you and they fought about.
Yes.
And for 3 hours.
They didn't
hours,
like the end God of Moonlight. Karen
was here. Wow. And
I was like, but that's the whole point. I was like, that's the whole point of the movie. Yeah,
that is the whole point of it, right?
Yeah. So we had a 3-hour argument.
Wow. Well, to what extent do you know?
So it is just, we're just all really different now.
Yeah, you're all really different.
We all come to it different, in different ways. It.
I'm so happy.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it is like, that is like, I think, as you were kind of going through litany of some of the other like problematic representations or whatever in different kind of black comedy, it's like I'm thinking a lot about like, you know, sexuality and how it gets dealt with in different communities of color. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I guess I'll just throw to a clip here of let's talk about Men in Film from.
Yes. Okay, great.
From In Living Color. And then I just sort of want to ask, like, you know, in what ways would we deal with that now? Right.
Hello, I'm Blaine Edwards.
And I'm Antoine Mayweather.
And welcome to Men on Film, the show that looks at movies
from a male point of view.
Tonight's show is sponsored by... Nuts and Honey.
What'd you say?
Nut and Honey.
To what extent do you see to see the new Negroes like hitting up that kind of central sore spot in different, you know, in different comedies of color, especially like in black sketch comedy?
You know, the room was very small. We were only writing like them having like basically just like what their discussions are going to be. And so it was like Baron. Sometimes Mike was in the room. He was like in and out. And then our head writer, Kevin Avery, who is just, like, incredible. And then another stand-up comedian, OPME, Alec Baju. And it was just the four of us, mainly, doing a lot of the work. And I will say that I was the only queer woman in the room, queer person, and the only woman. So, you know, but they're all so, like, they all just... really were good and like good at listening. And if I was like, you know what, no to something, or like, let's not word it that way,
let's
or
not
let's
push it in that direction,
let's just like be mindful that you are doing something that could be in a certain way, and not even just to like kill jokes or something like that, but just to just like remind them, because they're probably not thinking about it and some of the time. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because still there's still like Key and Peele also play like gay characters in their sketches. And it's so good. Like what's like one of my favorite things is when Jordan, they're playing like a gay couple and Jordan's like, we're having a baby. And he like runs in the room. So I don't know. Like, how do you feel about it? Like now, like, do you feel like it's better to just kind of witness someone's take on it?
I think so. I mean, I think like, you know, they're like, gayness can be funny. Queerness can be funny. Like there's all sorts of stuff. Even like, even the SNL sketch on like Cherry Grove, like the opposite of like Fire Island. And then it's like all like lesbians processing and weeping and drinking goblets of wine and crying.
It was so good though. Yeah.
But so like that kind of thing where like, it's not about relying on the stereotype, but like figuring out ways to extract the humor that can be something that we can identify with as part of like a truth to the experience, as opposed to just a complete caricature, right?
I also think that two things that as a performer myself, I like, and a writer, I like to think about when I think about characters is like, one, I think what you're describing is that people really are in the character. Mm-hmm. Like that really helps like to... You make it a full person. Mm-hmm. That's like really important. You see them as a full person. Yeah. So you embody them as a full person, and then they present as a full person.
Well, that's why I like on Key and Peele when Jordan played, this This is, by the way, please Google this sketch. This sketch is hilarious. When he plays the script doctor who script doctored Gremlins 2.
I'm going to put a little bit of spice into the mixture here. What if we did this? Everybody here gets to design their own gremlin.
I don't see that the gremlin design is broken.
It's called brainstorming, not brain drizzling, sweet pea. Okay? Shut your mouth for a second. Look, here's the thing. None of this is final.
So you mean, like, what if there was, like, a brainy gremlin?
A brainy gremlin.
You talking about a gremlin with glasses who could talk and sing New York, New York? That's brilliant. It's in the movie Done.
It's brilliant because it's such a ridiculous movie to think that a gay black man is why that movie worked. So I just feel like, you know, when I see Men on Film, again, I always say that it annoys people, but it's the whole scenario about growing up in San Francisco and being around gay men like this and being around gay men who weren't performative. This is just who they were. They were theatrical by nature. So it didn't feel unusual. It was weird to see the response around them. If you notice, they always park their sketches sort of towards the end, mm-hmm. which was, you know, In Living Color was like 9 o'clock, 9:30 airtime. So they always posted them later in the hour so as to get people to, you know, warmed up with the fire marshal Bills and the, you know, Jamie Foxx as what's her face? Jamie Foxx as Wanda. And they were warming everybody up with the platitudes of the typical bullshit. And then when it came time to somebody that was probably a little more controversial, they parked them at the end of the show.
The other thing that I was going to say about writing character like that is, or any character, and especially because I write characters that I think I like to write like controversial characters, but I think that it's so interesting to come at it from love. Like all the best roasts ever, like roast jokes or like even amongst friends, like the things that hit the hardest and are the funniest are the things that are coming from a place of love. You don't actually hate that person. You're not trying to make fun of them.
Yeah.
You like love how funny they're being.
Yeah.
And that, and you think it's funny what they're doing because you love them, you know? And so I think that that's like a really important thing that I think you can feel when you watch a sketch.
Yeah.
Like that.
For sure. And I think that one of the things about that, that particular sketch, that recurring sketch too, though, is that they were smart and they were witty. And as well, you know, like they had, they had wordplay and language. They kind of showed off that sword speak, you know, that way of speaking. And that was, that to me was kind of like a switch point in my own mind too. I'm just like, that's right. We're really fucking clever people.
Right.
So this has been just a super fascinating conversation. I'm just like wondering though, like as we leave off, I guess, for the evening, if there are any sketches or characters from shows that you would say are perfect or the kind of ideal or as a writer is aspirational for you or just as a person who consumes comedy, it's just like this is a kind of platonic ideal of something that I really, really am into.
For me, I have to say, I know it's going to be a little cliche, but Dave Chappelle's when Charlie Murphy is talking about telling his stories about Rick James. I love it because it's like storytelling and it's like so in the culture and it's like gossipy and it's got this like documentary feel.
He had this thing with me where he used to always like with me, man. I don't know what started it.
But you know, he was hanging out with the big dogs, you know, Charlie didn't know he was doing crazy things and I had to straighten him out. Sometimes I had to go upside his head.
Things like escalated to the point where, you know, my man got too familiar and I ended up having to whip his ass, man, you know, because, you know, he would step across the line. Habitually, he's a habitual line stepper.
I reference habitual line stepper constantly with
he's
my mom.
Habitual line stepper.
Yeah.
I say that once a year.
Yeah.
And when it really requires it.
You're like, they are a habitual line stepper. Yeah.
My favorite Chappelle is, you know, Chappelle is everything to me. I follow him forever. the man is, by the way, one of the nicest people, most gracious people, the funnest people, the funniest people. Player hitter's ball.
Man, you ought to take that cane and beat whoever made that suit to death.
Why don't you vacuum that coat, man?
Well, well, well. The most diabolical haters this side of the Mississippi. Buck Nancy, what can I say about that suit that hasn't already been said about Afghanistan? It looks bombed out and depleted.
Dave Chappelle, I mean, he cornered post 9/11 conversation where African Americans sat, you know, having conversations about things that it's not necessarily like it was uncomfortable or we'd never talked about it before, but just talking about it, and then taking that stance when people were getting too close for comfort and being like, forget this.
Yeah. No.
You know?
Yeah. I also think that he has like an incredible, like his stand-up specials that came out, he's just in such an, because he took so much time away, because he wasn't here. He wasn't in the heat, you know, while it was happening. So he could just come in and comment on it.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic. Because
it's the word for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I'm the host of the newly rebooted podcast, formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree!
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh. With me in the studio,
Ellington Wells.
And Karen Tongson.
So every week on Pop Rocket, we'll be asking our panel, what's your current jam? Ellington, what's up?
Okay, my current jam right now is Sweet But Psycho. I know it's an oldie, kind of, from last year. But bad. I didn't know about it, and I just found out about it, and I'm obsessed with it.
Well, there we go. That is a good jam.
I'm dedicating that one to Brittany.
Oh,
she would love that.
I love how you bookended your appearance here. That's very, very
she
elegant.
Probably pass that song on.
Very elegant.
KT, what's your jam?
So my jam is from the French-Vietnamese actress-singer An Lu, who starred in this film Diva. And the song is called Pourquoi tu me fous plus de coups? Or Why Don't You Break Me More? And it's from 1988, and it's a French new wave type single. But I'm going to play it, and I'm going to explain a little bit about why I chose it and then why I was surprised by some things I found out about it. So you know how that Spotify algorithm just like throws things at us. And of course, everybody was watching Notre Dame burn and weeping the other day. And so like, of course, hearing a kind of boppy French song was a little spike of nostalgia and, attachment there. But then I read a little bit more about it and realized that a couple of years ago when the algorithm first began suggesting it to people, the song is actually kind of problematic because the lyrics, I mean, this is what, you know, I should have become fluent in French instead of German. But like the lyrics say basically like, why don't you, your like physical abuse is basically like love. So it's another one of those situations like, oh, yes, this song is so enchanting. And you don't realize what it's actually saying. All to say, though, part of what it registers for us is just like that vexed and complicated history of the things that we lost in relationship to Notre Dame, but also the legacy of French colonialism and
oh
all
my
these
God,
things
Katie.
And all these things where we pay attention to that great tragic historical loss, but we also, you know, there are many other losses of monumental things that we should be aware of. And that's all. I'm going to leave it at that message tonight.
Wow. Three churches with mostly black folks attending burned down in Louisiana. You should donate to that GoFundMe that's going around because that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, Harlem Blues by Nat King Cole. I went to a tiki bar this week and gotta love tiki bar soundtracks. This is playing there and I just thought it was beautiful.
Oh.
Since my sweetie left me, Harlem ain't the same old place. Though a thousand flappers smile right in my face, I think I'll mooch some homemade hooch.
It's funny that I was listening to this song there because San Francisco sucks. So,
and you say that as a native San Franciscan.
As a native San Francisco, y'all are just plunging into the depth and the darkness. Good luck with all that. Tonight, the New Negroes premieres. I implore you to watch it. Ellington, you've been an amazing guest.
Thank you.
What time is it on?
I'm pretty sure it's at 10.
And where can we find you?
No.
And where can we find you on social media?
Yes, on Instagram at Ellington Wells. On Twitter at Draw Different.
You're welcome back anytime. We don't
yay.
Say that to everybody,
yay.
By the way. Yeah, we don't. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, with
Karen Thompson
and Ellington Wells.
Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ossie Miso. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews. This week, we'd like to thank Ben Kubrick. Enjoyed this latest episode, finally giving you the stars you've long deserved. Well, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Would love to know what episode it was. If you want us to hear your feedback or even ask one of us for advice, no one's asked us for advice yet, you can call 530-237-4108. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join us on our Facebook group, which I really need people to join that Facebook group in a major way because we need to start stirring it up. There's a lot of lively discussion that happens there. It is fun. People get into it. It's rando. I love it. Follow us on Instagram at Pop Rocket Podcast. We love the engagement there. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. And I don't have anything cute to say because she already is. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.